She steps out of my hold, her frown deepening. You didn't think to consult me? I'm tempted to haul her to me and kiss her again until she forgets whatever it is that upset her about this. However, we've put on enough of a show for the passers-by, so I just ask, were you attached to that car, my love? I can get it back if it has some sentimental value. That doesn't seem to please her either. No, I don't care about the car. It's just... She squares her shoulders and looks me in the eye. Peter, I need you to involve me in decisions that affect me, that affect us both. You told me once that this can be a partnership if I wanted, and I want that now. It's important to me. I consider her words and nod. Okay. She blinks. Okay. I'll ask you before I do anything else with the car, I say, and open the passenger door. Clasping her elbow, I help her inside, my jeans growing uncomfortably tight as I catch a glimpse of pale blue underwear when she swings her shapely legs inside. We might need to reevaluate this dress as a staple of her work wardrobe. I'm not just talking about the car, she says when I get behind the wheel. It's about everything. Like wedding arrangements and where we're going to live and what you're going to do work-wise. I want us to make all those decisions together going forward, like any normal married couple. I understand. I carefully check the mirrors and pull out onto the street. You want me to consult with you like a husband should. I get it. You do? She sounds puzzled for some reason. I thought that... Never mind. I'm glad you get it. I smile and lay my right hand on her slender thigh, enjoying the silkiness of her bare skin. If my Petichka wants me to consult her about such trivia as the car or what I'm going to do with my time, I'm glad to do so. We can make all the decisions together as long as she understands one simple fact. She belongs to me for the rest of our lives. Chapter 60 Peter. Saturday morning dawns warm and clear, with the kind of blue cloudless sky I would have ordered from a wedding catalog if I could. The weather was the one uncontrollable variable, but as luck would have it, it's cooperating, so the event should go off without a hitch. I've made sure of that. Organizing a wedding is not all that different from planning a hit, I've come to realize. You have to be just as methodical about the logistics and prepare for all eventualities. Of course, the stakes are very different, but it's good to see that some of my skills are applicable in the civilian life. Esquero was wrong. I'm going to make this work. Sarah and I will be happy here. Her hair and makeup appointments aren't until 10, and I wore her out last night, so I let her sleep while I make breakfast. Then I return to the bedroom with a steaming cup of coffee in my hands. She either hears me or smells the coffee because she rolls over onto her back, one slender arm splaying out across the mattress while the other hand scrunches into a delicate fist to cover a big yawn. "Is it morning?" she mumbles without opening her eyes, and I grin as I sit down on the edge of the bed and set the cup of coffee on the nightstand. Yes, my love. Leaning in, I nuzzle the warm, fragrant crook of her neck. It's our wedding day. Her hair smells sweet and faintly fruity, like the shampoo in her shower. It makes my mouth water. Unbidden, my hand slips under the blanket, closing around one soft, round breast, and my cock hardens, my breathing speeding up as her erect nipple stabs my palm. Fuck, there's no time for this. Not to mention, she might still be sore from the 3 times I took her last night. I force myself to straighten and move my hand away. Your breakfast is ready, I say thickly and stand up, adjusting the uncomfortable bulge in my jeans. I need to cool off before I attack her right here and now. Breakfast and wedding appointments be damned. She yawns again and sits up, holding up a blanket to cover those tempting breasts. Blinking the sleep out of her eyes, she focuses on the cup sitting on the nightstand. Is that coffee? You bet. And there's breakfast in the kitchen, a vegetable quiche and home fries. You'll need the fuel to last you through the day. She grins at me. You're amazing. My heart clenches and my cock twitches again as she jumps out to bed naked and beelines for the bathroom, apparently invigorated by the promise of caffeine and food. This is what I've wanted, what I've fought for all this time. Sarah like this, playful and affectionate with me. We'll never be able to erase the darkness of the past, but together we can build a lighter future. A future that still feels terrifyingly fragile for some reason. I shove the thought away as soon as it surfaces. There's no reason to assume that this kind of mourning is temporary, that it's anything other than the start of our new life. Today is our wedding day, and I'm going to make sure it's the best one ever. It's the least my Petitschka deserves after everything I've done.
Chapter 61. Sarah. The invasion begins, just as I finish gobbling down the breakfast Peter prepared for me. What feels like an army of stylists, makeup artists, and hairdressers descends on my tiny one-bedroom apartment, filling the living room with enough hair products, garment bags, and pots of eyeshadow for 15 brides, or drag queens. Pam and Susie, the women who measured me for the dress, are there, but so are two of their assistants, and at least four hairdressers and makeup people. It's hard to tell exactly how many, with all of them coming in and out of the apartment, to bring the ever-mushrooming amount of supplies. Peter promptly abandons me to the torture, claiming that he needs to oversee the security arrangements and other logistics at Silver Lake. His own tux is getting delivered straight there, so I won't even get a chance to see him in it until Danny brings me there later this afternoon. So not fair that all you have to do is put on a nice suit, I complain, mock pouting. And he grins, then drops a quick kiss on my lips, making my pulse jump.
Behave, or else,
he warns, silver eyes gleaming with amusement, and I pinch his side in revenge, making him laugh and kiss me again. Hair first, a flamboyantly dressed young man announces as soon as Peter leaves, and I let myself be guided to the couch, where an array of scary-looking styling tools are already spread out in a row. My hair is still wet from my morning shower, so it's first blow-dried into submission, then flat-ironed and curled. The updo apparently requires a perfectly smooth cuticle, which my wavy hair doesn't naturally possess. While that's happening, my nails are buffed, trimmed, and painted a soft pink shade, and then it's time for my makeup. Mom shows up, just as the last of the mascara is applied to my lashes. She's already coiffed to the max, and dressed in a long peach dress that emphasizes her still trim frame. Wow, she breathes as I get up from the couch, and I grin, walking over to hug her. You look amazing, Mom. I draw back to give her a thorough once-over. I love this dress. When did you get it? Your fiancé had it delivered last night. It's Chanel, can you believe it? I was just lamenting to your dad yesterday morning that I wouldn't find anything decent on such short notice. And then, bam, this dress arrives, and magically fits. Can you imagine? Your dad got a new tux, too. She sounds as excited as a teenager going to prom. Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. Peter must have installed cameras and/or listening devices at my parents' place again. An invasion of privacy we'll need to discuss. For now, though, I'm grateful he was thoughtful enough to include my parents in his insanely thorough brand of wedding planning. Mom loves to dress up, and would have been gutted if she'd had to wear an older dress, or something she didn't find sufficiently special. How's Dad? I ask, as Pam and Susie shoo everyone else out of the apartment, and make me strip down to my underwear to try on the dress. He's good. Still processing all this, but... Mom gasps as she sees the dress. Wow, Sarah, that's gorgeous. It's Monique Lhuillier, Pam proudly tells her, as Susie helps me put it on and fastens the buttons in the back. All handmade lace, every inch of it. Sarah, that's... Mom blinks several times, then audibly sniffles. Darling, you look so beautiful. Simply out of this world. Like some kind of fairy princess. Really? Let me look. I wait until Susie adds the hair clips, then walk over to the mirror in the bathroom. A striking beauty stares back at me, her green-flecked eyes huge and mysterious in her flawless face. And it is flawless. The forehead scar from my crash, almost invisible these days anyway, is completely gone, and my skin is as smooth and poreless as glass. An hour of makeup, and I look like I'm scarcely wearing any. Except that every feature appears as perfect as if it had been photoshopped. The hair is what gives the princess impression. Piled high on the crown of my head, it's an artful arrangement of curls and waves. Each strand so shiny and smooth, I hardly recognize it as my own. Even the color, dark brown with hints of red, is richer and brighter next to the diamond clips, though it could just be the extra glossiness imparted by all those products. Pam was right about the updo. It's exactly what this dress needed. The lace gives the sleek mermaid dress an ethereal quality, yet it's only in combination with the intricate hairstyle that it takes on that magical, fairy-like look that got my mom all teary-eyed. As I stare at myself in the mirror, my throat constricts. I'm getting married. To Peter. Today. The wave of panic is as spontaneous as it is irrational. Sucking in a gasping breath, I shut the bathroom door and lean against it, forgetting all about the fragile lace. My heart is like a war drum in my chest, my breath coming in rapid, shallow pants. I'm getting married. To Peter. I don't understand the source of my panic, but that doesn't make it any less intense. I can feel icy sweat popping out on my forehead and dampening my armpits. And it's all I can do to remain upright, instead of sinking to the floor. Peter and I are getting married. Sarah? Mom knocks on the door, sounding worried. Are you okay, darling? Am I? I should be okay. I should be over the moon, in fact. I'm marrying the man I love, one who's gone to incredible lengths to show me that he loves me, to make me happy. Despite our inauspicious start. Is that the issue? Is some part of me still unable to get past what Peter has done? The flawless face in the mirror holds no answers, so I take a couple of deep breaths and steady my voice. I'm fine, Mom. Just got a bit of an upset stomach. Oh, you poor darling. Do you have any Pepto-Bismol in the house? No, but I'm fine. Just give me a second. I take a few more deep breaths, and when my heart is no longer jackrabbiting in my chest, I wet a towel and rub under my arms. I then reapply antiperspirant and pat at the top of my hairline with a tissue, taking care not to smear my makeup. When the mirror confirms that there are no traces left of my impromptu panic attack, I paste a smile on my lips and step out, assuring Mom yet again that I'm fine. We return to the living room, which is now startlingly empty. They all left, Mom says, smiling at my look of surprise. Well, you were in the bathroom. Oh. I look at the clock, and am shocked to see that it's already 2 p.m. No wonder Peter wanted to make sure I ate a hearty breakfast. The ceremony starts at 4, but Peter said the photographer is coming at 3 for family pictures, Mom says. So we should head over there. Your dad is already on his way. Right. Okay. I curl my hand into a fist to hide the slight tremor in my fingers. My throat still feels too tight, and the thought of it all, the pictures, the ceremony, everyone staring and gossiping, is unbearable, completely overwhelming. Mom? I press a hand to my stomach, which is now genuinely unsettled. You know, I think I do need some medicine. There's a pharmacy a block away, so I'll just... What? No, don't be crazy. Mom all but pushes me toward the couch. You can't go anywhere dressed like this. Sit here, relax, and I'll be right back, okay? No, Mom, that's fine. I'll just slip out of the dress and... Sit! Mom's tone brooks no disagreement. I may be old, but I can walk a block. I'll be back in a few minutes, and you just sit and rest, okay? Maybe eat something, too. You might have low blood sugar. That's actually a good point. As soon as Mom leaves, I go to the kitchen and pop a few leftovers into the microwave. I remember this from my first wedding, being too busy to eat and feeling faint. This time, there's much less to worry about, thanks to Peter overseeing everything. So I actually have a few minutes to grab a bite. The photographer can wait. The doorbell rings, just as I'm taking the pasta out of the microwave. "It's open, Mom," I yell, grabbing a towel to make sure I don't burn myself with a hot plate. And then I realize it's far too soon for her to have returned. Did one of the makeup people forget something? Setting down the plate of pasta, I step out of the kitchen and freeze in place. Agent Ryson is in my living room, his gaze raking over my white dress with derision.
Chapter 62, Peter. "You've actually pulled it off," Anton says admiringly, as I adjust my black tie in the mirror. "Civilian life, amnesty, the girl, and all. I fucking can't believe it." "Believe it." I turn around and grin at my former teammates. "How do I look?" "Not bad." Jan walks around me, studying me critically. "I would have gone with a white tie, though. More formal, and goes better with your skin tone." Anton rolls his eyes at him. "Stop being such a fucking metrosexual. Seriously, Ilya, what did your mother feed this one?" "Same crap she fed me," Ilya says, and steps in front of the mirror to adjust his own tie. Unlike his elegant twin, who looks like he was born to wear a suit, Ilya resembles nothing more than a thug playing dress-up. The jacket strains across his steroid-enhanced shoulders, and the tattoos on his shaved skull gleam menacingly in the bright daylight. Sarah's father might have a heart attack just looking at him. And that's without knowing about the arsenal hidden inside his jacket. Inside all of our jackets. There's no real reason to worry, of course, but I'm still uneasy. Back in the good old days, events like this, especially in an outdoor venue, often provided an opportunity for us. Weddings, birthdays, funerals, we loved them all because our targets, caught up in all the excitement, would invariably forget some key aspect of security. It's a mistake I have no intention of making, which is why in addition to my usual Sarah-watching crew, I've hired 20 more bodyguards and commissioned aerial surveillance via a dozen drones. No one is getting within a kilometer of the venue without my knowledge. "So, how's the civilian life so far?" Jan asks, falling into step beside me as I head outside to check if the photographer has arrived. "Is it everything you've dreamed of?" His tone is mocking, as usual, but when I look at him, I don't see any amusement on his face. "Yes," I answer, deciding to take the question at face value. "You should try it sometime." He chuckles, but the sound lacks humor. "No, thanks. I'm enjoying this life too much." I nod, not the least bit surprised. Instead of taking advantage of the amnesty I got for him, Jan took over the business. Files, shell corporations, team accounts and all, and has been using the team's contacts to secure new, ever more lucrative gigs. The takeover happened the day after I left for Esquerra's compound, which means Jan had been planning it for a while. I was right to be wary. If I hadn't stepped down when I did, one of us would likely be dead. As expected, Ilya joined his brother in the new venture, but Anton is still deciding. "I'm already fucking rich, you know," he told me on the phone 2 weeks ago when Jan prodded him for an answer again. "I might miss the excitement and all, but I don't need more money. Not the way Jan seems to." He paused, then asked carefully, "You're not mad at him, are you?" "No," I told Anton, and I meant it. I told the guys they can carry on with the business if they want, so what do I care if Jan had been planning to step in my shoes all along? None of us are angels, and deep down, I always knew that Jan wouldn't be content following orders for long. Even back in Russia, there were hints of that. A red flag I ignored when I offered the Ivanov twins a place on my new team. In the context of my old world, our world, Jan Ivanov had been loyal enough, and since we avoided the ultimate clash, it makes sense to remain on good terms. You never know when a favor might be needed. So what are you going to do here? Jan asks when I stop to count the chairs in front of the gazebo. Other than plan weddings. I have a few ideas, I say, finishing the count. We're one chair short, something the venue staff needs to remedy right away. For now, wedding planning suits me. You know you're deluding yourself, right? Jan's tone lacks all hint of mockery, and when I turn to face him, I see a peculiar seriousness in his cold green eyes. This is not for you, any more than it would be for me. Did he and Esguera read the same script? Who are you trying to convince of that, I ask curiously. Me or yourself? He holds my gaze, then nods, as if seeing something I'm missing. Good luck, he says softly. I'll be rooting for you. And turning, he walks back, leaving me to track down the photographer on my own.
Chapter 63 Sarah. My pulse skips a beat, then roars into overdrive. This can't be happening. They can't arrest Peter on the day of our wedding. Agent Ryson, I'm proud of the steadiness in my voice. What are you doing here? He gives me a thin smile. Oh, don't worry, Dr. Kabakas. Or is it soon to be Dr. Guerin? I'm not here in any official capacity. My frantic heartbeat settles slightly. Why are you here, then? To offer my congratulations, of course. His mouth twists. You and your Russian lover sure had us all fooled. I remain silent, because what can I say? I understand how this must look from his perspective. From the perspective of anyone who's been following the story from the beginning, really. I'm marrying George's killer. The man who waterboarded me, invaded my life, and kidnapped me. The man Ryson spent the past 2+ years hunting. Tell me one thing, Dr. Kabakas, the agent continues bitterly. At what point did you and Sokolov conspire to rid you of your brain-damaged husband? Was it before or during the so-called attack on you? I suck in a horrified breath. Is that what he really thinks? You are mistaken. I never lied to us, never pretended to need protection from the man you're about to marry. His gaze is cutting. Yeah, I thought so. My neck burns. It wasn't like that, not at the beginning. Oh, really? How was it then? Did he brainwash you in Japan? Show you a few bedroom tricks to make you forget all the blood on his hands? Or maybe you didn't care about the alcoholic you were going to divorce? Yes, we know all about that. But your lover killed Kobakas's guards, too. Good men. Honest men. He blew their brains out. Or have you forgotten? I swallow the bile rising in my throat. Of course not. No. Ryson steps toward me. What about the police officers in the helicopter he shot down when they tried to rescue you from the supposed kidnapping? Or how about all the others he's killed and tortured? In the name of whatever twisted justice he's pursuing. Would you like me to give you a list of all his victims, so you can pin it on the wall above your marriage bed? I'm shaking now, my stomach in complete revolt. The smell of the warmed-up pasta, so tantalizing a minute ago, is making me want to vomit, and it's all I can do to hold Ryson's gaze, instead of curling up into a little ball of shame on the floor. It's true. All of it. Peter is a monster, and so am I for loving him. At my lack of response, the agent snorts derisively. Nothing to say? Well, let me give you a little warning. He comes closer, until I have no choice but to step back. Looming over me, he says softly, I don't know who pulled the strings, giving the two of you a clean slate, but if I've learned anything over the years, it's that psychopaths like Sokolov don't change.
He will commit another crime. And when he does, the deal he's made with my higher-ups will be null and void. We'll be waiting. And now, Dr. Kabakas, we also have your number.
He steps back and turns as if to leave. But then he stops and says over his shoulder,
Oh, and congratulations again. You make a beautiful bride. I hope the two of you will be very happy together.
He walks out then, slamming the door behind him, and I just barely make it to the bathroom before my stomach heaves, expelling its contents into the toilet bowl.
Chapter 64. Peter. She's late. The ceremony is due to start in 45 minutes, and Sarah is still not here. I give the photographer a scathing look as he pointedly glances at his watch, and he blanches, then looks away and starts fiddling with his cufflinks, as though that's what he was doing all along. According to the bodyguards watching Sarah's apartment, as well as the tracking devices I've planted on her, my bride is still at home with her mother. I've called both of them several times, but only Lorna picked up once. Sarah has an upset stomach, she informed me curtly, and hung up, and has been sending my calls to voicemail ever since. Worried and increasingly irritated, I survey the people milling around the gazebo in small groups, drinking champagne and eating the artfully arranged canapes. Nearly everyone is here already, seemingly having a good time despite some of the guests, mostly Sarah's friends and former co-workers, eyeing me like I'm Osama bin Laden. Jan is chatting with Sarah's new co-workers, while Ilya seems fascinated by what Sarah's bandmates are telling him about their performances. Anton is talking to Sarah's father about growing up in Russia, and I even see Joe Levinson, the lawyer who likes Sarah, knocking back shots of tequila at the bar and staring grimly in my direction. He's got balls showing up here. He doesn't know I'm aware of his interest in Sarah, but still, if he so much as looks at her the wrong way, he won't live to regret it. That is, assuming she ever shows up for anyone to look at her in any way at all. I wait 5 more minutes, check my Sarah tracking app every 30 seconds, and then I call Danny, who's part of Sarah's bodyguard crew today. I need you to go up to the apartment, I say when he picks up. Hand your phone to Sarah and do not leave until she calls me. Got it. He hangs up, and 5 minutes later, the phone lights up with a call from Danny's number. Sarah?
Peter, I... She swallows. I'm so sorry. I just need a little more time.
My worry intensifies. What's wrong? Did something happen?
No, nothing. My stomach is just unsettled.
Do you need me to send for a doctor, get you anything?
No, it's just...
She stops, then says carefully,
Look, Peter, I know this is awful timing, but...
Are you trying to back out? My voice is soft, betraying nothing of the fury blazing to life inside me. Is that what this is about?
No, not at all. I just need a little more time. Your return, the wedding, it's all happening really fast. I'm not saying we shouldn't do it, but maybe this is too soon. Maybe we can just live together for a bit, see if this is even...
Even what? The hard metal of the phone cuts into my palm. Even possible? Do you really think this is how it's going to go? The rage is white hot within me, but I keep my tone gentle and my expression pleasant as I step behind a little patch of trees away from curious eyes and ears.
Peter, please, I'm just asking for a little extension. We can tell people the truth, that I'm not feeling well, and then...
Let me tell you how it's going to go, Petichka, I say in an even softer voice. You can either go with Danny right now, coming straight here with no delays, or I'm going to come get you. Only we're not going to come back here in that case. In fact, there will be nothing here to come back to because I intend to leave no witnesses to this unfortunate event. I pause, then ask gently, Do you understand what I'm saying, my love? There's dead silence on the phone. Then she says in a broken whisper,
"He wouldn't."
"No? Try me." I wait a couple of beats, then add, "Of course, your parents don't fall into the witness category. I know how much they mean to you, so we'll just take them with us when we leave. How does that sound? They'll enjoy an exotic getaway, don't you think?" She's silent for so long I'm almost certain she's going to try to call my bluff. Except I'm not bluffing. I don't give a fuck about any of these people, with the exception of Sarah's parents. If she pushes me, I will carry out my threat, even if it means giving up the amnesty I fought so hard to get. Without Sarah, none of that bullshit matters. If I can't have her, I might as well burn down the whole fucking world.
"You're insane,"
she whispers finally, and I smile darkly as I hear the capitulation in her voice. "Yes, I am, Petichka. Don't forget that. I'll see you here soon." And hanging up, I stroll back to mingle with the guests.
Chapter 65. Sarah. I'm still shaking as I emerge from my bedroom, clutching Danny's phone in one hand and smoothing the soft lace of the dress with the other. "I'm ready to go, Mom," I tell her when she rises from the couch, clearly surprised to see me. "Are you sure? Darling, you look really pale." "No, I'm fine, Mom." I manage a small smile. "The medication is finally kicking in." My mom returned with the medicine, just as I was coming out of the bathroom after being sick, so I immediately took a couple of pills and told her I had to lie down for a few minutes. I thought she'd accepted that explanation, but as her eyebrows pulled together, I know I was just fooling myself. Mom knows me far too well. "Sarah, darling, you know you don't have to go through with it, right?" she says, stopping in front of me. "If you're having second thoughts, you're allowed to change your mind. Everyone would understand. You don't have to marry him if you're not ready." She's wrong. I'm not allowed to change my mind. Not if all our friends are to survive the day. I have no idea if Peter would actually do what he implied, but I can't take that kind of risk. Not with a man who's capable of such monstrous things. If the agent's goal was to make me feel lower than a squashed bug, he succeeded admirably. Every word he threw at me felt like a bullet, because all of it was true. The crimes Peter has committed are awful, unforgivable, and I know it. I've known it all along, yet I let myself fall for him. I accepted his evil, embraced it to the point that I agreed to marry him of my own free will. Even after Ryson's visit, I wasn't going to reject Peter, though he interpreted it that way. I was just still reeling from Ryson's verbal lashing, and my instinct was to plead for time. I would have gone through with the wedding, just on another day. "It's not that, Mom," I say, as her eyes skim over my face, looking for any hint of doubt. "I love Peter, and I want to marry him. I was simply not feeling well." Her gaze drops to the phone I'm holding. "What did he tell you?" I blink at her. "What?" "That big driver of yours who came. He gave you that phone. I assumed to call Peter, right? So what did your fiancé tell you?" "Nothing. He just reminded me of the time. And speaking of which," I pointedly look at the phone's lit-up screen, "we really need to go." Mom searches my face for a few more moments, then nods. "All right, darling. If that's what you want, let's go. We have a wedding to attend." Chapter 66. Sarah. I must zone out on the way, because the ride to Silver Lake seems to take just a few seconds. Blinking, I come out of the car to the cheers of some guests, and my gaze falls on a tall, dark figure standing a dozen feet away. Peter. My enemy. My stalker. My lover. My husband-to-be. His eyes are like gray tar, reflecting nothing, but I can sense the volatile emotions within him, feel the coiled violence masked by that predator-like stillness. Still, I can't help but drink him in, running my gaze over the powerful lines of his body. I've never seen him dressed so formally before, but it suits him. The sleek tuxedo emphasizing the V-shape of his torso, and the crisp white shirt making his tan skin glow. He's magnificent, as striking as any movie star. And despite the continued turmoil within me, a prickle of heat runs over my skin, the reaction as primal and uncontrollable as the accompanying frisson of fear. I might have saved others by showing up, but I'll pay for that delay. Peter won't let my moment of weakness slide. I hold his gaze as I approach, and he extends his hand, his mouth curved in a mocking half-smile. I place my hand in his big palm and feel the warmth of it all the way down to my toes, which I'm only now realizing feel as icy as my fingers.
"Hello, Petichka,"
he murmurs, and bends his head to place a gentle kiss on my lips. Around us, I hear a few "aws," probably from my new co-workers, who have no reason to suspect this is anything other than a simple love match. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Marcia staring at us, her face tense and pale. And behind Peter is Joe Levinson, who's wearing the expression of someone attending a funeral, where the casket is filled with explosives. "Hi," I reply softly, doing my best to ignore the stares around us. "Is the photographer here?"
"Yes, my love. Let's go."
Placing a possessive hand on the small of my back, he steers me toward a picturesque spot by the lake, where a man with a camera is taking pictures of Phil and Rory. My dad is already there too, and my mom is on the way as well, walking as briskly as her high-heeled shoes allow. It warms my heart to see her so strong and healthy. The memory of her in the hospital, bandaged like a mummy, still haunts my nightmares. When we're halfway to the lake and out of the earshot of the other guests, I glance up at Peter and murmur, "I'm sorry." His jaw hardens.
"We'll discuss this later."
I swallow and look down, focusing on not tripping on the uneven ground and high heels. I didn't lie. I am sorry. Now that I'm back in Peter's orbit, I feel the inevitability of it all, the pull of the dark threads that bind us. My earlier doubts seem baseless and naive, irrational to the point of insanity. What does it matter if our wedding is today, tomorrow, or a year from now? My tormentor is going to be the same man, the same lethal killer I've fallen for. From the moment I met Peter, I've known there's no escape for me, and what happened today just confirms it. As we approach the lake, I spot Peter's teammates clustered together, off to the side, and I wave at them. I'm pleased to see that they wave back. It's strange, but I missed them too. To me, they're like Peter's brothers. When we reach the lake, the photographer, a chubby, bearded man who resembles a dark-haired Santa Claus, arranges us in a variety of poses, from looking longingly into each other's eyes, to sitting together on a bench, to Peter holding me in his arms. He takes pictures of the two of us together, and then each of us on our own. Of the two of us with my parents, and then with all of our friends. The permutations are endless, and after I introduce Peter to everyone, I find myself zoning out, smiling and posing on autopilot. Would Peter have done as he threatened? Would he have killed all these people, just to punish me for standing him up? I want to believe that the answer is no, but my instincts tell me yes. He's capable of it, and his obsession with me has always had a tinge of darkness, just like our bedroom play. Peter loves me, treasures me, would do anything for me, including commit mass murder. It's a terrifying thought, or at least I should find it terrifying. And I do, for the most part. It's only a tiny portion of me that finds something about that level of obsession intoxicating, as thrilling as jumping off a cliff into a stormy sea.
"Ready, my love."
Peter's large hand possessively clasps my elbow, and I look up at him, dazed.
"For the ceremony,"
he clarifies, and I nod, letting him lead me to the gazebo. This is it. Married life, here we go.
Chapter 67, Peter. My Petichka is pale and startlingly beautiful as she stands next to me, listening to the judge give his spiel. He talks about love and commitment, about supporting each other through thick and thin, and a dark wave of satisfaction rolls through me as he poses the traditional question to Sarah, and she responds quietly, "Yes, I do." He turns to me then. "Do you, Peter Garin, take Sarah Kabakas to be your legally wedded wife, to have and to hold, in sickness and in health, until death do you part?" "Yes," I say clearly, making sure my voice carries to our small audience. "I do." "You may now kiss the bride," the judge says, and I face Sarah. She's looking up at me, eyes wide and soft lips parted, and I bend my head, brushing my lips gently across that tempting mouth. It's very important to be gentle right now. The slightest lapse in control could unleash the rage simmering within me, and I can't have that happen. Not until we're alone. There's clapping and hooting, and then a familiar tune starts playing from behind the gazebo. The band I commissioned, the one Sarah seemed so excited about, is here, having set up and gotten ready to play during the ceremony. It cost me a pretty penny to get them here for a couple of hours, but judging by the reaction of the guests, it's worth it. "Shall we?" I offer my arm to Sarah as the majority of the younger guests hurry toward the music, ooing and aahing over the chance to see their idols live. "Of course." Her slim hand slips into the crook of my elbow as she gives me a cautious smile. "Let's go." We didn't prepare a dance, but at the urgings of Sarah's new co-workers, I take her into my arms and we sway together to a slow, romantic song, one that I recognize as being a classic rather than one of the band's own numbers. Again, I have to be careful, have to keep my touch light and gentle, to maintain the appropriate distance instead of yanking Sarah to me and ripping off that elegant white dress to take her right here and now, on this soft green lawn. Thankfully, the slow song ends before my self-control starts to crumble, and the band launches into one of their most popular numbers. Sarah's bandmates and a few other guests join us, laughing and clapping, and we end up dancing in a group before Sarah's friend Marcia tugs her away to dance with her and two of the other nurses. I wait until the song is over, and then I signal to the catering staff to start bringing out the appetizers. Since there are only about 24 of us, we have 3 tables. A small round one for me and Sarah, and 2 bigger oval ones for the rest of the guests. I didn't bother with assigned seating, so Sarah's parents end up with their friends, and the majority of Sarah's friends and co-workers congregate at the other table. The food is outstanding, as it should be from a Michelin 8-star chef, and as we all start eating, the majority of the guests appear to be having a good time. Sarah must think so too, because she says quietly, "Thank you for organizing everything. This is one of the nicest weddings I've been to." I smile at her calmly, even though all I want is to bend her over the table. "I'm glad, my love. I want you to be happy." And she will be, once she gets over whatever remaining doubts she has about us. I will make sure of that. I'll do whatever it takes to make her happy. The only thing I won't do is set her free. In any case, I don't think she wants that. Not deep down where it truly matters. I don't know what spooked her this afternoon, but I have one suspicion. Could she have found out about Sonny Pearson's death? I don't see how, as she hasn't been to the clinic in the last couple of days, but it's the one thing that makes sense. Either way, I'm going to get to the bottom of it. Tonight. As soon as we're alone. After we fill up on food, Sarah and I cut the cake, a gorgeous 7-tier creation with sour cream frosting, and then everyone goes back to dancing and picture-taking. The brief introduction Sarah performed before the ceremony were clearly not enough for everyone, and I soon find myself surrounded and fielding prying questions from guests whose bravery appears equal to their alcohol consumption.
"How did you two meet again?"
Marcia demands, all but swaying on her feet as she downs yet another glass of champagne.
"Sarah said you've been dating on and off for a while."
"Yes, exactly," Joe Levinson chimes in, his jaw set in a pugnacious line. "When and how did you meet? None of us knew Sarah was in a relationship." I remind myself that the knife strapped to my ankle isn't for slicing this man's throat. "We met in a club in Chicago some months ago," I answer calmly, and surreptitiously signal Antone. "Since I traveled a lot for work, we decided to keep our relationship low-key until we were certain it was going somewhere."
"And you're from Russia?"
Andy, the red-headed nurse, studies me with a confused frown.
"As in the same place as..."
"There you are!" Anton slaps me on the back. "I was looking everywhere for you. The guys need you for a moment." "Excuse me," I tell the guests politely and follow Anton to the spot by the lake where my teammates camped out with an expensive bottle of vodka. "Thanks for the rescue," I say when we get out of the earshot of Sarah's friends. "I'm not in the mood to deal with your questions today." "You'll need to eventually," Anton says, and I shrug, though I know he's right. "In order to integrate with these people, I'll have to give them some kind of answers." "So how does it feel to be a married man again?" Ilya asks, pouring me a shot of vodka. I knock it back instead of replying, feeling the familiar burn down my throat. I don't drink much, never have, but it's tempting today. I want to forget how it felt when I heard Sarah's hesitant voice on the phone, telling me that she needed more time. "Pour me another one," I say, holding out the empty shot glass, and Ilya obliges. I down it again, then hand the glass back to Ilya. "More?" he asks dryly, and I shake my head. "I'm good, thanks." This will have to do as far as taking the edge off. My self-control is already on thin ice, and I'm not about to risk hurting Sarah when I finally get her alone. I'm not that much of a monster. "So this is it, huh?" Anton gestures toward the people mingling by the gazebo. "This is what you want." "She is what I want." I sit down on the grass watching Sarah go from group to group, laughing and chatting, doing a great imitation of a happy bride. "She just comes with all this attached." "Maybe," Jan says, reaching for the bottle. Unscrewing the top, he takes a swig straight from the opening. "Or maybe not." I give him a sharp look. "An expert on my wife, are you?" He shrugs and takes another swig. "She may yet surprise you. You think she's all that different from us? All sweetness and goodness and light? You think any of those people..." He gestures toward the guests with the bottle. "Are all sweetness and light?" I turn my gaze back to Sarah instead of answering, and he sighs. "It surprises me that you, of all people, don't see it. She wants you, right? Loves you, even though she knows all about the kind of man you are." I don't answer that either, and he continues. "Why do you think she's drawn to you? Because she sees something good in you? Or because she secretly craves the bad?" Anton snorts. "Oh, please. Not that shit again. Every single time you have vodka, my bet is on the latter," Jan says, as though Anton hadn't spoken. "She's more like you than you imagine. And all that shit," he waves the bottle at the gazebo again, "is what she's been trained to think will make her happy, not what she wants for real." I get up, brushing a few specks of grass off my pants. "There's more vodka on our table," I tell Ilya, who's enviously watching his brother drain the bottle. "You better go get it, if you want it. We're going to be wrapping this up soon." As fun as it is to listen to Jan's drunken ramblings, I'd much rather take my new wife home to bed.
Chapter 68. Sarah, I feel like Peter and I are in a play, each of us acting out our roles. He's the gracious groom, reserved but exceedingly polite, and I'm the beaming bride, bubbly and excited. Or at least I'm that, after 3 glasses of champagne. They really help with the bubbly and excited bit, which in turn helps with avoiding my friend's overly probing questions. I can always flit away to another group of guests, laughing and encouraging everyone to dance, something they gladly do, given the source of the music. "How are you feeling, darling?" Mom asks, when I join their little circle for a minute. "Any more tummy issues?" "No, all good, Mom." I give her and Dad my sunniest smile. "How are you guys?" Mom smiles and reaches over to take Dad's hand. "Having a great time, like everyone else. Your Peter did a wonderful job." "Thank you, Mom." I beam at them both. My parents' reaction was my biggest worry, and I'm hugely relieved that they seem to have accepted my relationship, at least outwardly. I didn't give them a lot of choice, of course, but it's still nice to know that they're willing to give Peter a chance.
"There you are."
A familiar, accented voice murmurs, as a long arm wraps around my waist. I look up to meet my husband's silver gaze, and grin, forgetting to be wary for the moment. "Hi, where have you been?"
"Over with the guys,"
he says, nodding toward the lakeshore. And I laugh, as I see the 3 Russians passing around what looks like a vodka bottle.
"So the stereotypes are true?"
Dad asks, following my gaze. And Peter nods, smiling.
"For the most part. Personally, I prefer beer. But sometimes you really need to feel the burn."
He glances down at me, his lips still curved.
"How are you feeling, Petichka?"
My breathing quickens as I notice the dark undertone in that sensuous smile. "Oh, I'm good."
"Good."
He faces me fully and tenderly brushes his knuckles across my jaw.
"I was worried."
I swallow as my heart rate jumps another notch. We're approaching the moment of reckoning. I can feel it.
"Why don't you do the bouquet toss, and then we'll say goodbye to our guests,"
he suggests, as though reading my mind.
"It's been a long day, and you still might not be well."
"Yes, darling," my mom chimes in, happily oblivious to the undercurrents. "Why don't the 2 of you head out? It's been a wonderful party, and I'm sure everyone has had enough to eat and drink." I glance at the sun setting over the lake. "But..."
"Come, my love."
Peter's arm tightens warningly around my waist, even as his smile remains in place.
"Let's go."
"Okay." I look at my parents. "Bye, guys. We'll see you soon." "Bye, darling." Mom takes a step toward me, and Peter releases me long enough to let me hug her, and then Dad. "Congratulations again." "Thank you." I give them another bright smile, and Peter leads me away to toss the bouquet and say goodbye to all the other guests. "So, are we moving?" I ask, as we exit the car next to my apartment building. My voice is a little too thin, but all the liquid courage has worn off on the ride here, leaving my heart hammering faster the closer we get to home.
"Do you want to?"
Peter looks at me, his gaze veiled as we approach the building.
"As I told you, I found a few nice places, but I didn't want to take the leap without consulting you."
His tone contains no hint of mockery, but I sense it anyway. If today demonstrated anything, it's that he still has all the power and makes all the rules. I decide to go along with his pretense. "Yes, I think I'd like to move. This place is too small for the 2 of us, and it might be nice not to have so many neighbors."
"I agree."
His eyes take on a brighter gleam, and his voice deepens as he murmurs,
"I want to have you all to myself."
Blushing, I open my mouth to reply, but at that moment, he bends and smoothly picks me up, ignoring my startled gasp.
"Tradition,"
he tells me, grinning darkly, and walks into the lobby, carrying me with his customary ease. We pass my young female neighbors on our way to the elevator, and I hide my face against Peter's neck as they squeal and yell out, "Congratulations!" We definitely need to move somewhere with fewer people. "You can set me down," I tell Peter, once we're inside the elevator, but he just looks at me, his eyes darkening.
"Why?"
he murmurs, his arms tightening around me.
"I like you like this."
My pulse spikes again as my earlier nervousness returns, and I push at Peter's shoulders. "No, really. Set me down, please."
"Why?"
His jaw hardens, all playfulness leaving his expression.
"So you could run, hole up somewhere, and lie that you're ill."
"I was ill." I glare up at him, anger displacing my anxiety. "Ask my mom if you don't believe me. I threw up and had to take Pepto-Bismol." His dark eyebrows snap together.
"What?"
"Mom told you that already. On the phone. I heard her tell you." I push at his shoulders again as the elevator doors open and he steps out, carrying me down the hallway. My stomach was unsettled. His frown deepens as he stops in front of my apartment door.
"Yes, she mentioned that, but I thought..."
He carefully lowers me to his feet and reaches into his pocket for the keys. "You thought it was an excuse?" "No, it happened." "Not because I was ill, though." I bite the inside of my cheek, then decide not to start our married life with a lie, even one by omission. I wait until we enter the apartment, and then I say in a calmer tone, "Peter, there's something you should know. Agent Ryson came here today, right before I left." He turns into a statue, then pivots to face me, incredulous.
"What?"
"Not in any official capacity," I hasten to reassure him. "He just wanted to talk to me." His big hands clench at his sides.
"Why?"
I think he was frustrated over how everything turned out. He thinks I lied to him, and that we..." I swallow, my throat burning. "Conspired to kill George. That I wanted you to get rid of George because he was brain damaged and an alcoholic. I was already planning to divorce." Peter swears low under his breath.
"That fucking Abludok. I should've..."
He stops and takes a calming breath. In a softer tone, he asks,
"Did he upset you, Ptichka?"
Stepping toward me, he gently captures my chin, making me look up at him.
"Is that why you were going to bail?"
I manage a tiny nod. "I'm sorry about that. I really am. It was already happening so fast, and then he came and..." I squeeze my eyes shut, then open them to meet his storm gray gaze again. "I'm sorry. I just wasn't thinking straight." Peter moves his hand across my jawline, the touch soft and tender.
"What else did he tell you, my love?"
"Nothing. He was just..." "Oh, he did say that if you do anything else of criminal nature, the deal would be null and void, and that they now have my number as well." Peter's gaze hardens again.
"I see."
He steps back, dropping his hand, and I realize that he's angry. As angry as I've ever seen him. Suddenly worried, I step forward, catching his hand in both of mine. "You're not going to do anything to him, right? I told you this because I don't want to have any kind of lies between us, not because I want you to punish Ryson." He doesn't respond, but I glean my answer in the tight set of his jaw and the rigidity of his palm in my hold. "Peter, don't. Please. Listen to me." I squeeze his hand. "He's a federal agent, and he wants you to slip up. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if that's why he came here today. To provoke you, and make sure that you violate the terms of the deal. Don't play his game. It's not worth it." Peter's expression doesn't change.
"Are you worried about him, or me?"
I release his hand. "Both, of course. I don't want you to hurt him. And I definitely don't want you to get in trouble because of him."
"Hmm."
Peter gently strokes the side of my face again.
"I wonder..."
I moisten my lips. Wonder what?
Would you be happy if I just went away and let you be?